Good evening and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Dr. Charles Troutman. Troutman is a professional engineer and geologist. He has had more than 3 decades of teaching experience, and since 1990, he has served as the executive director of the Science Center, the world-renowned educational science museum located in Ithaca, New York. Thank you for joining me.
Good evening, Tish. Pleasure to be with you.
Now, most of your education has been focused on geology and engineering. How did you get interested in these disciplines?
Well, I've always been interested in the way things work, and I've always been interested in the outdoors. And I think when I was in college, I started out in physics and earth science, and then through graduate school migrated into engineering as a way to actually put these things to use in solving real problems for people. And then it all kind of came back full circle, I guess, in graduate school here in Ithaca when I came back to Cornell and ended up with getting a PhD in civil and environmental engineering. And as I say, it was a chance to use the technical background that I had and my interests and put it to work solving real problems. And at that time, I was involved in earthquake engineering and working out in San Francisco.
I was going to ask you about that. You actually worked for the U.S. Geological Survey in Menlo Park, too, right?
That's right, yeah. When I was a graduate student at Stanford, I spent a better part of 2 years working for the U.S. Geological Survey, doing some mapping in Marin County, and used that information to write up some things for the survey in one of their reports.
Is that a fun place for a geologist to be in regard to the earthquake potentials?
Well, that's why I went out there. You know, I had done my undergraduate in the East in Massachusetts, and I got into Cornell for graduate school, and I got into Stanford and got no money from Stanford and got a full ride from Cornell.
Whoa.
And decided to go out to the West Coast because I really wanted to see what it was like out there. And this was in the mid-1970s. It was a very active time for geologists out there. Of course, it's an active area geologically with all the earthquakes and landslides and other things going on. So it was a very heady time to be out studying earth science on the West Coast.
Uh-huh. You became the executive director of the Ithaca Science Center in 1990. The center was just in its infant stages during that time. Tell us what it was like in those early days.
The Science Center was founded in 1983, and I became a member at that time, although our kids were very young and we really didn't do very much, went there once in a while, but I sent in an annual membership check and was really not very involved for the first 7 years. But I kept an eye on it, and as things grew and developed, I went to some of their events, and then this big dream came up in the late 1980s. Architect Bob Leathers, who was here in town and building community-built projects, mostly playgrounds at the time, came up with this grand scheme to do a community-built building, first time that had ever been tried. And I remember asking the question of everybody that I knew, how is this going to work? You know, how are you going to fund this? Who's going to actually do the work? How is this going to come together? And nobody really had the answer. And then I saw this ad. They were looking for an executive director. So they had been all volunteer for the first 7 years.
And then they didn't have a permanent home either. They kept moving to different spaces.
Yes. We were gypsies, really. We started out in 200 East Buffalo Street down in town, and we had free space there for 9 months, but then that got rented, and we had to move to what was known at that time as the Hickey's Music Building, which is now the site of the mental health building, that big brick building down from the library. We were in there for about 4 years, and then we got booted out of there, and we had to go to Center Ithaca. We had 2 different places in Center Ithaca. After 4 moves, each one being a little bit smaller than the previous one, we decided, you know, it's time to fish or cut bait here. So we closed down the operation, we put everything in storage, and we decided to embark on this campaign in 1990 to get a permanent home. And that was really our goal at that point, was to get a permanent home.
Uh-huh. And so you were involved in this great dream. Did you have a particular vision of what you wanted to see happen at that time?
Well, when I got wind of the opportunity to apply for this position, several very key things had happened. The first is that we had found a site. And that was a big thing, because finding the right site for a museum is so critical. Mm. It's just like the three L's of real estate: location, location, and location. If you don't have the right place, then you can have the best museum in the world and people won't come, or they won't be able to find you. So mm-hmm. we were very, very fortunate to have a committee of very dedicated people who looked at 60 different sites, and they came up with the site that we're on now. It was a very difficult place to acquire because it was city land, and the city had never given up any of their property before. We were the first people in history to get the city to give up some property. And they didn't really give it up. They sold it to us for $104,000, and it was only half of the block. So we had a lot of work to do. We had no money at all.
So, wow, that's amazing.
So that was the first thing that happened. The second thing that happened is that one of our board members, who was working with a high-tech firm in town called Vector Magnetics, he and his boss, who was the president of the firm, decided to give us a $50,000 donation to get started. And that was really the turning point for the whole thing, because that allowed us to put a down payment on the land and actually get site control, and also to put the other half of that gift into hiring staff. And that was what allowed the museum board to go out with an ad for an executive director. And there were many of us that applied. I've since run into a number of people that had applied.
You're still angry about it?
No. Everybody's very cordial. And I was very fortunate in having the opportunity to make a go of it.
So. Yeah. Well, you, in an interview recently, I think it was, you even said that this was a dream come true because the three things you loved in life are kids, science, and building things.
That's right. That's exactly right. And here was an opportunity to put all three of those things together. All of the work that I had done previously in earth science and consulting and project management at Cornell, I was, for about 6 or 7 years after I got my doctorate at Cornell, I was a research faculty member doing project management. And so all that put together, I think, prepared me for what I'm doing now in a wonderful way.
Uh-huh. And this, the Science Center is the first community-built science museum in the world, is it?
That's right, yeah.
Tell us how this happened. 3,400 volunteers, I hear.
Yes.
Some of them just hang out?
Well, and some of them are still hanging out. We have one volunteer that came on a weekend in September of 1992 to help us build. He saw a sign on the highway right outside the museum, and he is still with us. He works, has never taken a penny from us, and he works 7 days a week. He puts in about 60 to maybe 70 hours a week as a volunteer, and has been doing that for the last 16 years. So, yes, we've had some remarkable volunteers.
Wow. And so what did you do in participating in the building of this? Were you actually using a hammer and a saw and doing some of the...
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yeah. I put in probably 3,000 hours of construction that year that we were building. But what happened here, I want to go back to something that happened very early that even got us to the point where we could consider doing something like this. There were two women back in the 1960s that were wives of faculty members at Cornell, and they decided that they were both scientists, and they wanted to do something for the community to get kids more involved in hands-on science. So they volunteered at what was then Central Elementary School, now called Beverly J. Martin School. And they did that for about 15 years. They had a resource room. The principal, Beverly J. Martin, gave them a room to put their stuff in, and they had a lending library of small animals. You could take a hamster home, that sort of thing.
Wow.
And it was just a wonderful program. They first ran it out of their station wagons, and then as they got established, the principal gave them some space. And so that went on for a long time. And after about 15 years of that, they decided that they wanted to do something that would reach more kids and have a life after their own involvement. They recognized that as soon as they retired from this, that probably nothing more would happen. So they put an ad in the Ithaca Journal and asked that anybody that might want to start a science museum, a hands-on science center, come to a meeting at the public library. And about 50 people showed up. They had a great time, evidently. I wasn't there, but from the stories I've heard, people were very enthusiastic, and they formed a board. 20 people, plus or minus, volunteered to sit on that first board, and that was really the beginning of the effort. And as they did that, they, of course, had to retire from this teaching activity that they've been doing at Central Elementary. And as a going-away present, the kids there got together and took up a collection. And they collected about $280 in, you know, nickels, dimes, pennies, quarters, stuck it in a brown paper, unlabeled grocery bag, and gave them that at their going-away party.
Oh,
and so
sweet.
That was the founding gift of the Science Center, was $280 in change from the children and parents of Central Elementary.
Uh-huh.
And it doesn't get much more grassroots than that, I guess.
That is very sweet. Now, was this idea for a science museum, was it supposed to be an extension of science education or something entirely different?
It really was intended to, first of all, it was intended for kids. It was to try to get them more involved in science, because this was a time when schools were cutting back on science education, and if they had a science teacher that serviced a school, a lot of times that teacher was being cut back. And so this was in response to the need for kids to get more science. They were getting the math, they were getting the reading, other subjects, but the science really wasn't there. So that was one of the motivations. It was also not intended to teach science. I think that's really critical about what science museums do. They don't teach science. Their goal is to inspire, and it's to get kids fired up about science. It's to see the other side of science. Sometimes science is taught in the schools tends to be a little bit on the dry side, a lot of memorization of terms and testing to see what you've learned. And real science isn't like that. Science is not a collection of facts, as Carl Sagan used to tell us. It's not a collection of facts. It's a process. It's a way of looking at the world and understanding the world and what's going on outside and inside. So that's what the Science Center tries to do. We try to get kids interested, see science from the process standpoint.
Because I think this is kind of a science-phobic culture in some ways, and it seems to me people I know who hated science love science museums, which is remarkable. So you've made it fun.
Well, that's our goal, to make it fun and also to sprinkle some education in there. And one of the things that we would love to have happen, for example, is for a child to, let's suppose in a middle school or high school science class, and be studying something like pendulums. And then to have this aha moment that, oh yeah, when they were 10 years old, they were playing with something at the Science Center or swinging on the swings, which we have a set of swings of three different lengths, and they swing at different rates. Obviously, the shorter one swings faster, the longer one swings slower. And our goal is to have kids say, oh yeah, now I remember that experience I had at the Science Center swinging on those different swings. That's why that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And then we know we've made a connection, and that concept is really sunk in.
Now, the Science Center is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year, and in fact, in these next few weeks, there's going to be some celebrations. How has it evolved since it began in regard to what you have there for people and exhibits for kids? How has the vision changed?
I would say that the vision has expanded dramatically in a couple of different ways. We've always had two main stocks in trade, and that is exhibits and programs. The exhibits are the things that you see on the museum floor when you go in, and they're typically modules, something that you can do in a matter of a few minutes. And so we've always had exhibits. What has happened with our exhibits is that they've evolved quite a bit. When we first started out, there's a museum in San Francisco called the Exploratorium, and it's one of the original hands-on science centers. It started in 1969, and they've published a series of notebooks called the Exploratorium Cookbooks, and they have sketches and instructions on how to make some of their best exhibits. And so a lot of science museums, when they start off, they will take those Exploratorium Cookbooks and build some of the exhibits in them. And that's a way to get started without having to have real expertise on your staff. You can have people that are interested in building things and they can use these cookbooks. So we did quite a bit of early exhibits from the cookbook. What's happened, though, is that our staff and our volunteers in particular have gotten very adept at taking ideas, something that maybe they see in another museum, something that they are interested in themselves, and building it here in the Science Center. So we have now a shop of about 4,000 square feet underground. Most people don't see it, but we have a very well outfitted shop, can do wood, metal, plastic, electronics and such. And we have both volunteers and a staff of about six people that are working continuously to come up with new ideas, try things out, prototype them, and when they work well, then we put them on the museum floor. So our exhibits have gotten quite a bit more, I won't say sophisticated, because we still want them to be simple. We want people to be able to see the phenomena, and we want them to feel like, oh, you know, I could do that myself.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Charlie Troutman. He's the executive director of Ithaca Science Center. Now, I know you've had a huge amount of teaching experience. Did you miss that kind of classroom teaching, or do you feel like you're doing it at the Science Center?
In a sense, I do miss it. I have been teaching since I was about 15 years old. I worked in scout camps for seven summers, all through high school and college. I was a counselor in various places around the country. And while I was in college, I was a teaching assistant in the physics department, have done that throughout other graduate work that I've done. And most recently, I'm an adjunct professor in the School of Civil and Environmental Engineering at Cornell and taught for 7 years a course called Professional Practice in Ethics and Engineering. Mm. So I've had quite a few opportunities to teach, and I enjoy it very much. What I do now is, I guess you could say, more conceptual. It's conceiving new programs and then helping to implement them, but not actually doing them myself. So I don't very often get the chance to get out there and work with kids myself, but I am involved in helping to create things that other people will bring to kids. So in that sense, I'm trying to keep my foot in that teaching door.
Continue to be an educator. Now, you traveled to Europe in mid-2007. Tell us what you were doing. You were on sabbatic?
Yes, I had the opportunity about 20 years ago to go to Europe for a year on a fellowship from the Alexander von Humboldt Foundation, which is based in Bonn, Germany. And at that time, I was doing engineering research at the Technical University of Munich. But spending a year overseas, I noticed that people in Germany in particular were much more environmentally conscious than people in America. And this had to do with everything from recycling to land use to a variety of social policies. And that experience just sat in my brain for all these years. And a couple of years ago, as I was getting ready to take some sort of sabbatical, I was thinking about what I would do, and it occurred to me that it would be interesting to see what the museums in Europe were doing with respect to the environment and sustainability, because museums really are supposed to reflect the culture that they're embedded in. Mm-hmm. And so I felt that science museums in particular would be a very good reflection of the society in terms of showing what was important and what issues were current and how they were portraying those. So I went back to the Humboldt Foundation. They were very accommodating and gave me an extension to my fellowship from 20 years ago.
My goodness.
And essentially covered my travel, and the Science Center was very generous in covering my salary while I was gone, continuing that. So I went over to Munich in July of 07 and spent 3 months visiting every science-related museum that I could fit in to a three-month stay. And essentially was looking at two things. Was looking at how they were addressing the issue of sustainability in their museum operations and how they were addressing sustainability and specifically the issue of climate change with respect to their exhibitions and programs, so their public, their external face.
How they communicated
with
the communities. Mm-hmm.
And so I traveled something like 27,000 kilometers. We went to 10 countries, went over with my wife, and we spent quite a bit of time networking around, finding the best places to visit. Went to most of the European museums that I've always wanted to visit and never had an opportunity to see, and learned quite a bit about what the Europeans are doing in this area of sustainability.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk a little bit about the subject of global warming. As a scientist, do you have people asking you if it's real? And how do you answer?
I think by now most people realize that the planet is heating up. There's not very much debate anymore that it's happening. There are still, however, some people that doubt whether there's an anthropogenic origin to the recent heating. And that's a little bit more difficult to address in some ways. There's, of course, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, has come out with a series of reports over the last couple of decades that increasingly show that the vast majority of scientists in the world believe that humans are causing this. And there's no doubt in my mind that we're causing it either. I should say that up front. Mm-hmm. But there are still a few people who doubt it. And I think at this point, it's a matter of just moving forward with what needs to be done. We're past the point of trying to convince every last person. We need to do what we need to do. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot that we need to do, obviously.
And so you, when you came back from Europe, you decided to kick off a sustainability
initiative.
Mm-hmm. Tell us how that's going.
Well, this is a 10-year initiative. It actually started in early 2007 for us. We'd been thinking about this for about a year or so. And the Science Center has a very forward-looking planning committee. And it every few years it does a trending analysis where it looks at what are the most important things that we think are going to affect our business, science museums, the world. And out of that trending analysis came the conclusion that sustainability and global warming may very well be the most important thing that's going to happen to us in our lifetimes. Mm-hmm. And that science museums could make a real impact here by bringing this to the attention of, in particular, our children. Because adults read about it every day, they see it in the news, they hear about it on the radio, and children aren't really exposed quite as much to some of these concepts. So our feeling was that we should make sustainability something that, I guess, programmatically is very much part and parcel of the core of what the Science Center is all about. Mm-hmm. So we began putting our toes in the water, if you will, with a number of different things to try to educate ourselves about this topic, because most of us didn't know very much about it. We knew what we were reading about in the press and what we were seeing in Al Gore's movie, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But we really didn't know the science very well. So over the last couple of years, we've been educating ourselves. We've been trying some things. Now, one of the first things that we did last year was we budgeted 1% of our overall museum budget for sustainability-related activities.
Now, what does that mean in practical terms?
Well, in practical terms, our budget is a little over $1 million. We budgeted $12,000, which is about 1% for sustainability-related activities. Mm-hmm. And we immediately put half of that into reducing our carbon footprint by changing to 100% wind-generated power. So all the electricity, the 250,000 kilowatt-hours that we buy every year, is now produced by wind, renewable energy, and that makes a very important statement to the community, to our members, to the rest of our staff, about putting our money where our mouth is. Mm-hmm. And so all of the outlets and the light switches in the museum have a sticker over them that says powered by wind.
Wow.
And that lets everybody know and constant reminder that we're not just talking the talk, but we're walking the talk.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any advice that you give kids in regard to what could they do when they go home and tell their parents to do for sustainability and for environmental consciousness?
Well, one of the things that we have done is to look at most of our programs. We do a number of educational programs for visiting school groups, for birthday parties, different ways that we interact with kids programmatically. And we've tried to put at least to some mention of some aspect of sustainability into as many of those programs as we can. So we will talk about whether it's a life science related program or something more physics related. We'll try to put something in there that at least gets kids thinking about this. Now, we're not trying to beat kids over the head.
Right.
We're not trying to scare them. We want them to have a positive outlook on the world and about their role in creating a better world. So we're doing this lightly, but mm-hmm. we're trying to do it very thoughtfully.
Oh, that's great. What a great service. The Science Center has traveling exhibitions, right? Talk to us a little bit about that. I find that fascinating.
Well, this is one of the other areas where we've evolved quite a bit over the years. When earlier we spoke about the Exploratorium cookbook exhibits that we built, and a lot of those happen in people's basements, for example, because we didn't have a shop back in those days. Back in the mid-1990s, we were very fortunate in being part of a collaborative of five museums that applied for an NSF grant to build their own exhibits. And the proposal was successful, and out of that project came our first traveling exhibition. That was an exhibit on mathematics for kids and about fun things about numbers. For example, would you rather get $1 a week in allowance in pennies, or would you rather get 1 penny the first week and then exponentially double that for a number of weeks?
Mm.
And most kids, of course, see the 1 penny versus the 100 pennies and say, well, I want the 100 pennies. But it turns out after you get through about 10 weeks, you're making more money, you're a lot more money. In fact, it's not 10 weeks. And by 10 weeks, you're making 10 times as much money. You're up to 1,000 pennies instead of 100. Very quickly, you get into a lot of money. And so we have an exhibit that allows you to lift up each week's collection, whether it's $1 or whether it's 1 penny, 2 pennies, 4 pennies, mm-hmm. 8 pennies, exponentially doubling. And by the time you get to 12 weeks, you can hardly lift it. So that's an example of how we tried to make mathematics into something fun that kids could relate to. All of our exhibits, where we can, we try to make them relate to mm-hmm. your day-to-day experience. And allowance is one of those things that all kids have an experience with.
Uh-huh.
So we produced this 1,500-square-foot traveling exhibit. It was called Fun 234, all about a number of things, and it became an instant hit. It was it's still on the road now, and it gave us the confidence that we could build our own exhibits. At that time, we weren't touring our own exhibits. We were touring them through a traveling exhibition service based out of Washington, D.C.
Mm.
But based on that first experience, we applied for another NSF grant, and we built a second exhibition called Tech City, which was about engineering. That led to some more proposals and some more projects, and now I think we've developed 6 or 7 of our own traveling exhibitions.
That's great.
We're still doing the one-off exhibits that volunteers built and our staff built in the museum, that just, you know, one particular topic that somebody got excited about and built an exhibit on. We're still doing that. But in addition to that, now we have the capability of building major traveling exhibitions for the U.S. Science Museum market. And what has happened in the meantime is that we tried around 2000, I guess, to see whether we might be able to tour our own exhibits rather than having somebody else tour them for us. And that way we would get a lot more of the income from that. And that also was successful. So now we have a total of 13 exhibitions that we're touring. We're even touring museum exhibits from other museums now. We have more than half of our exhibits are not our own. They're from other museums that have come to us and asked us to market and maintain and tour their exhibits for them.
That's great. You've actually done a great job with the Science Center, we must say. We are out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
Uh-huh. And good luck with the 25th anniversary.
Thank you so much, Tish.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.